You may have heard an old story. Young woman who's with the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra, but they're in New York City and they're going to be performing at Carnegie Hall. But that morning, she's going to practice. The taxi drops her off at the wrong intersection and she gets confused about where she's going and she's wandering around carrying her cello in New York City. And finally, she stops by a little store. Old black guy there behind the counter, and she says, "Please, can you tell me, how do I get to Carnegie Hall?" And he looks down at her cello and he says, "Practice, man, practice." There are two phrases, spiritual discipline, spiritual practice. They mean pretty much the same thing, but the word discipline implies punishment, correction, whereas practice leans more towards exercise, preparation, and skillful means. If you want to have a life and live it abundantly, it is in your reach. You only need to practice generosity mentality. You only need to practice saying thank you. Giving thanks nurtures gratitude in the heart and mind, if it is done well, if it is done not as a perfunctory gesture, but as a spiritual practice, it nurtures gratitude. And gratitude is part of that abundance mentality, the idea that there is more than enough for everyone. Peter Singe, organizational guru and writer, wrote of abundance mentality. It results in the sharing of prestige, of recognition, of profits, of decision-making. Abundance mentality opens possibilities, opens options, alternatives, and creativity. The abundance mindset takes personal joy, individual satisfaction and fulfillment, and turns them outward, appreciating the uniqueness, the inner direction, the proactive nature of others in connection. It recognizes the unlimited possibilities for positive, interactive growth and development, creating new alternatives. There are other virtues that support abundance mentality, but the first, the most essential, is saying thank you. If you want to live in abundance, then notice how much you have, notice how much there is, and be grateful for it. Then notice how much you have been given, how much of your life depends on the lives of others, and say thank you in some way that you can, and then give others an opportunity to say thank you to you. The reason we do this is because there is scarcity. Scarcity inspires fear, it inspires craving, it inspires jealousy. And once your mind is not only aware of scarcity, but develops a scarcity mindset, a scarcity mentality, it seems as if there will never be enough. Even people with abundant things will keep gathering more things because their mind is set on scarcity deep in their heart. It's as if the universe, in scarcity mentality, it's as if the universe is just a single pie and you better take your slice or you might not get any. And if someone else takes a bigger slice, then you're not going to get enough. So you better go ahead and take a bigger slice. Of course, one danger is the person who takes the bigger slice is the person who gets fat. But scarcity thinking is quite natural. There are moments when there is not enough, when things seem limited for individuals. And so we are reinforced this idea. But it's a wrong idea. It's an ultimately wrong idea. And it cramps our souls and it limits our spirits. But it can be countered. It can be undone, the scarcity mentality, and be replaced with a sense that there is more than enough for everyone. To nurture an abundance mentality is to first notice the abundance. And we had this in the worship service, the song that the choir sang, "Be grateful from the love of the sky, el cielo, for the immense ocean, for the cantar del bosque, the singing of the forest." Or Mary Oliver, they're noticing, here, quickening yeast, there, blue plums, here, the clam deep in the speckled sand. Your work is loving the world. Your work is to be astonished. There's an ancient mystic, a Christian mystic, Meister Eckhart, who wrote, if the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough. Many of you will soon have Thanksgiving dinner with, maybe it's with blood relatives, maybe it's with a chosen family, the people who gather here on this property. And at these, often there is some sort of perfunctory or stiffly pious grace spoken. The term grace comes from the ancient Latin for thanks, as in the Spanish word gracias. It just means, and so saying grace just means saying thanks. When my daughters were young, we had a Thanksgiving, and then the next night they wanted to do the same thing we had done the night before. What we did was not one person speaking and saying grace. We all got an opportunity to say something we were thankful for. And then the next day, the daughters wanted to say something that they were thankful for. And we did this every night for years. Sometimes it would be dogs or the robins or a party that someone had or the food. All sorts of things came into our dinner ritual. And my wife, who sometimes struggles with chemical depression, at one point she encouraged the girls to help her create a book of 100 things to be grateful for, and they illustrated every couple of them, writing down the things that we were thankful for so she could be reminded, connected with others, saying thanks. I once had a friend who went through a terrible divorce. Her lesbian partner had an affair, betrayed her. They had worked so hard to get married, and then the whole thing fell apart. And for months afterward, she was still complaining. My friend was complaining about her ex. She was complaining about the betrayal. She was complaining about the losses that she experienced. She was complaining about how hard it was to nurture her children alone. And someone suggested that she start a gratitude journal. So she went ahead and she bought the nice little book. And then on the first day, she wrote, I am thankful for, at the top of the first page. And then she just looked glumly at that page. All day she looked at it. She thought about it. And finally she wrote, I am thankful for more space in my closet. Second day, looking at that phrase, I'm thankful for, and she said, less clutter in the bathroom. And it went on like this for a while, but she knew her spirit had changed. She knew the practice of daily saying thanks in a gratitude journal was changing her when she wrote down, I am thankful for the big smile of Celie, that was her youngest daughter, of Celie, when I give her food she likes. So say thank you. Notice and say thank you. And then the second practice is to notice the generosity of people in particular. Because we know there are some people who are less generous than others. We notice that there are some people who take more than others. But notice all the people who are always giving. Find the people who are being generous. Find their kindness and then thank them for it. I notice when I'm in lines in stores, when I'm going past a cashier, the people who are simply just doing their job and the people who are looking at me and asking me questions and creating a sense of connection. And I always say thank them. I say thank you and have a great day. I want you to enjoy your day. And I'll say have fun. I'll say have fun even at work. Way of saying thank you, and I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your presence. Stewardship Committee is trying to encourage you to see the power of gratitude. The Worship Committee has created the gratitude box so that you can write down the names of people in this congregation and something they did great. You can just go ahead and put anything you want in that gratitude box, really. If you just like the sunlight, if you like the abundant blue sky, go ahead and put it in there. Practice noticing even the simplest gifts. And when there's not quite enough chairs, realize how great it is that we have this space, that we have the opportunity to sit together, find something to be grateful for, and the people who have worked, the people who worked to bring out more chairs quickly this morning. And then the third practice every day is to try to be generous yourself and give other people a chance to say thank you to you. We do this for two reasons. One is nurturing our own sense of generosity, of abundance, and gratitude. If you are not grateful for all you have, if you are not able to share at all, if you are clinging, then you are certainly not spiritually free. The act of letting go, of giving, of bringing some, I had a couple cans up there, and I took those cans out of my cupboard, and I suddenly thought, well, no, I'm not going to have any beans. And I thought, I can get some more. And I brought them, right? I once had a friend who loved doing things for other people. She was part of the pastoral care team in that particular congregation. She loved going and helping out, helping the elders, helping little children. She was always being helpful. This is the way she was in the world, and she loved doing that. But then she got an illness. It was an illness that kept her from being able to stand or walk well. She was in a lot of pain. She was either in bed or in her couch during the day, and she couldn't even do things for herself. She had to have people coming over, and I stopped to visit her, and I said, how are you doing? And she goes, I hate this. I hate this. People are doing things for me. I'm the one who's supposed to be doing things for other people. And as we talked about it, we began to realize that she was actually giving other people a chance to have the same joy that she usually had. She was giving other people a chance to be generous and kind and helpful and to experience the spiritual joy and pleasures of being generous and kind and helpful. And I realized she was able to give people. I said, you can encourage them in that. You're giving them something. And when she could think of it as giving instead of just taking, she felt better. She felt joyful. She felt happy. The amazing thing about helping other people is that it feeds our spirit and gives us more of a sense of abundance. It strengthens our souls. Despite any difficulties I face, no matter how hard my life is, if I get the chance to help a little infant grow quiet and fall asleep in my arms, I feel powerful and joyful. There's a striking moment at the beginning of Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Miracle of Mindfulness. He's talking with a friend named Alan. Alan's the father of a 7-year-old boy and now a newborn girl, Anna. And he's obviously a little stressed by lack of sleep and all the things they have to do. And talking with this teacher about his life. But then at one point he says that he has discovered a way to have a lot more time. He said, before I used to always divide my time up. Like I had the time that I could give to my son. And then I had the time that I could give to my wife. And then I had the time that I was giving to the baby. And then I had the time that I was going to work. And maybe at the very end of the day, I would have a little time left over for myself. I'd carve it out in the middle, some little time for myself. I could go reading. I could watch something. But now I've come to see that it's all my time. It's always my life. And when I'm with my son, I'm thinking, what am I getting from this? How can I make this wonderful, this feeling of just seeing the presence of his son or the great feeling of working on something together? And when he's with his wife, what he's getting from that. And when he was with the baby, thinking of what he was getting out of that, how his life was richer and fuller. And he says, the remarkable thing is that now I have unlimited time for myself. It's all mine. Often spiritual teachers will show us how the same situation can be flipped over just by seeing it differently. But we know, of course, that though there is an abundance in this world, though there is more than enough for everyone, we know that it is not distributed evenly. We know, for example, that fossil fuels will not last forever. We know We know that more and more species are just going out of existence. We know that there's an inequity and an imbalance in the world, and that some are taking more than they should and not giving back in the way they should. We see this in terms of racial injustice. We see this in the way we concentrate poverty in our society. We know. But when you start to live by abundance mentality, we stop seeing the scarcity. About a decade ago, all the Unitarian Universalists in Olympia, Washington, were working with an interfaith group helping street people. Some of these people had set up a tent village in downtown Olympia. And of course, a lot of people saw this as taking. They were taking public space. They were diminishing the beauty of the downtown. They were making it a less safe place. And so finally, the city decided to drive the tent city out, the little tent village out. And the Unitarian Universalists immediately said, come on to our land. They allowed the tent village to move onto their property. But they could immediately see, as they started interacting with these people and trying to help them and organize their move, they began to see that living in a tent in a rain-soaked forest was not an adequate life. And they wanted to help these people. And so they started organizing them and asking them what they wanted. And they started asking people in the county. They went back to the interfaith community, more and more people in the government. And they finally had a piece of land that was given by the county, generously donated. It was something that was used as a drainage area. And that drainage area became kind of a central pond. And then around it, they put these tiny houses, these one-room houses. They had those built. And then these people had stable life, and they had a community center, a little community building. And there was one woman that I got to meet there. Everyone said it was impossible to help these street people and to help so many of them. But so they called this new village Quixote Village, the name of that Spaniard who was tilting at windmills, right, doing the impossible. And there was this woman that I met there. And she told me she had spent more than 17 years on the street, cut off from her family. Her own children did not talk to her. She did not talk to them. They didn't trust her. The complete division from all community and life. Alcohol had destroyed her life and taken everything from her. And she told me about her. She was showing me her garden. She loved the squash, the little yellow squash that she was growing in her garden, this abundance that she had, this little patch of ground. And she would have these things that she could share with other people, and she was talking about how she was going to share them. And then she told me about how she had, once she had gotten there and her life was stable and she had a stable home, she had started to write to her children. And she had to write a couple times before they started writing back, and then eventually started visiting. And then her voice cracked when she told me about her first Christmas with her children and her grandchildren who she had never seen. And she said, your people, you people, she knew that I represented all the people who had helped. She said, you didn't just give me a house, you gave me my life back. Poet Alberto Rios wrote, one river gives its journey to the next. We give because someone gave to us. We give because nobody gave to us. We give because someone's giving has changed us. We give because someone's giving could have changed us. We have been better for it. We have been wounded by it. Giving has many faces. It is loud. It is quiet, its story's old, plot worn in the pages too, but we read that book anyway, over and over again. Giving is first, hand to hand, every time. Mine to yours, yours to mine. You give me blue and I give you yellow, and together we are growing green. You gave me what you did not have, and I gave you what I had to give, and together we made something from the difference. To live abundantly, practice generosity, and let people say thank you. Find the people who are generous and say thank you to them, and then turn to the universe, to the world, to all that is, and say thank you over and over.